In November 1835, HMS Beagle arrived at Tahiti, a destination as classic to Darwin through the voyage of Captain Cook as the Galapagos now are to us. The Beagle had been away from England for 4 years. The 26-year-old Darwin was homesick. Nevertheless, he was delighted with Tahiti and its inhabitants. He explored the interior and watched as Captain Fitzroy paid an official visit to the Queen of Tahiti. Darwin was also keen to defend the missionaries. Later, after their stay in South Africa, where they found a strong anti-missionary feeling, Fitzroy and Darwin sent a letter defending missionaries and describing the beneficial effects of their work to the South African Christian Recorder. This was Darwin's first publication. Darwin and Fitzroy are often misrepresented as antagonists over science and religion. Darwin is described as skeptical and Fitzroy as a biblical literalist. But both are incorrect. This letter, written in support of the missionaries, shows that the two young men were in broad agreement. It was only after the voyage that their views diverged. Fitzroy did become a fundamentalist after the voyage, and Darwin gradually lost his faith in Christianity and a personal God. He long remained convinced, however, that a creator had designed the laws of nature, and a man of science, like himself, could discover these unwavering natural laws.
November 15th, 1835. At daylight, Tahiti, an island which must forever remain as classical to the voyager in the South Seas, was in view. The centre, as the clouds rolled past, showed the wildest and most precipitous peaks. As soon as we got to an anchor at Matavai Bay, we were surrounded by canoes. Crowds of men, women and children were collected on Point Venus, ready to receive us with laughing, merry faces. They marshalled us towards the house of Mr. Wilson, the missionary of the district, who gave us a very friendly reception. The only ground cultivated or inhabited in this part of the island is a stripe at the base of the mountains. The whole of this land is covered by a most beautiful orchard of tropical plants. In the midst of bananas, orange, coconut, and breadfruit trees, spots are cleared where yam, sweet potatoes, sugar cane, and pineapples are cultivated. Little winding paths, cool from the surrounding shade, lead to the scattered houses. They are pleasant, airy abodes, but not quite so clean as I had been led to expect. In nothing have I been so much pleased as with the inhabitants. There is a mildness in the expression of their faces, which at once banishes the idea of a savage, and an intelligence which shows they are advancing in civilization. No doubt their dress is incongruous, as yet no settled costume having taken the place of the ancient one, but even in its present state it is far from being so ridiculous. They do not, even to the Queen, wear shoes or stockings, and only the chiefs a straw hat on their heads. The common people, when working, have the whole of the upper part of their bodies uncovered, and it is then that a Tahitian is seen to advantage. In my opinion, they are the finest men I have ever beheld. Very tall, broad-shouldered, athletic, with their limbs well-proportioned. It has been remarked that but little habit makes a darker tint of the skin more pleasing and natural to the eye of a European than his own colour. To see a white man bathing alongside a Tahitian was like comparing a plant bleached by the gardener's art to the same growing in the open fields. Most of the men are tattooed. The ornaments so gracefully follow the curvature of the body that they really have a very elegant and pleasing effect. An unbecoming fashion is now almost universal. It is shaving the hair from the upper part of the head in a circular manner, so as only to leave an outer ring. The missionaries have tried to persuade the people to change this habit, but it is the fashion, and that is answer enough for Tahiti, as well as Paris. November 17th. The ship was hemmed by a flotilla of canoes, and when the natives were allowed to come on board, I suppose the number could not have been less than 200 on our decks. It was the opinion of everyone that it would have been difficult to have picked out an equal number from any other nation who would have given so little trouble. Everybody brought something for sale. Shells were the main article of trade. The Tahitians now fully understand the value of money and prefer it to other articles. Some of the chiefs have accumulated considerable sums of money. One not long since offered $800 for a small vessel, and frequently they purchase horses and whaleboats. I went on shore and ascended the slope of the nearest part of the mountains. When I descended in the evening, a man met me bringing with him hot roasted bananas, a pineapple, and coconuts. I do not know anything more delicious than the milk of a young coconut after walking under a burning sun. The pineapples here are also of such excellence as to be better than those reared in England, and this I believe to be the last and highest compliment which can be paid to a fruit, or indeed anything else. 18th of November. In the morning I came on shore early, bringing with me some provisions and two blankets for myself and a servant. The whole island may be considered as one group of mountains, so that the only way to penetrate the interior is to follow up the valleys. The glimpses of the lofty central peaks, seen up the avenue of the valley, were extremely picturesque. The valley soon began to narrow, and after having walked for 3 or 4 hours, the width of the ravine scarcely exceeded that of the bed of the stream. On each hand the walls were nearly vertical. Till the midday sun stood vertically over the ravine, the air had felt cool and damp, but now it became very sultry. Shaded by a ledge, we ate our dinner. My guides had procured a dish of small fish and freshwater prawns. They carried with them a small net stretched on a hoop. Where the water was deep in eddies, they dived and, like otters by their eyesight, followed the fish and thus secured them. The Tahitians have the dexterity of amphibious animals in the water. Leaving the bottom of the valley was very dangerous. A face of naked rock had to be passed by the aid of ropes which we brought with us. We followed little ledges, and if the abyss had not been partly concealed by ferns, my head would have turned giddy, and nothing should have induced me to have attempted it. In the evening, we reached a flat little spot on the banks of a stream. Here we bivouacked for the night. By the aid of strips of bark for twine, the stems of bamboos, and the large leaf of the banana, the Tahitians in a few minutes built an excellent house, and with the withered leaves made a soft bed. They then proceeded to cook our evening meal. A light was procured by rubbing a blunt-pointed stick in a groove, until by friction the dust became ignited. The fire was produced in a few seconds. To a person, however, who does not understand the art, it requires the greatest exertion, as I found, before I, at last, to my great pride, succeeded in igniting the dust. Having made a small fire, they placed a score of stones about the size of cricket balls on the burning wood. In about 10 minutes the stones were hot. They had previously folded up in small parcels made of leaves, beef, fish, and bananas. These were laid in a layer between the stones, and the whole covered up by the earth so that no smoke or steam escaped. In about 1/4 hour it was most deliciously cooked. With a coconut shell we drank the cool water of the stream and thus enjoyed our rustic meal. The banks of the stream were shaded by the dark green knotted stem of the ava, so famous in former days for its powerful intoxicating effects. I chewed a piece and found that it had an acrid and unpleasant taste. Thanks be to the missionaries, this plant now thrives in these deep ravines, innocuous to everyone. In the close neighbourhood there was the wild tea, which has a soft brown root like a huge log of wood. This served us for dessert, for it is as sweet as treacle and with a pleasant taste. I did indeed admire this scene when I compared it with an uncultivated one in the temperate zone. I felt the force of the observation that savage man, with his reasoning powers only partly developed, is the child of the tropics. Before we laid ourselves down to sleep, the elder Tahitian fell on his knees and with closed eyes repeated a long prayer in his native tongue. He prayed as Christians should do, with fitting reverence and without fear of ridicule or ostentation of piety. Those travellers who hint that a Tahitian prays only when the eyes of the missionary are fixed on him should have slept with us that night on the mountainside. During the night it rained heavily, but the good thatch of banana leaves kept us dry. November 19th. At daylight, my friends prepared an excellent breakfast. Unwittingly, I was the means of my companions breaking one of their own laws. I took with me a flask of spirits which they could not resolve to refuse, but as often as they drank a little, they put their fingers before their mouths and uttered the word missionary. About 2 years ago, although the use of the ava was prevented, drunkenness from the introduction of spirits became very prevalent. The missionaries prevailed on a few good men who saw their country rapidly going to ruin to join with them in a temperance society. From good sense and shame, all the chiefs and queen were thus at last united. A law was passed that no spirit should be allowed to be introduced into the island, and that he who sold and he who bought the forbidden article should be punished by a fine. When one reflects on the effect of intemperance on the aboriginals of the two Americas, I think it will be acknowledged that every well-wisher of Tahiti owes no common debt of gratitude to the missionaries. 22nd of November. The Queen resides at the harbour of Papiette. It is the seat of government and chief resort of shipping. Captain Fitzroy took a party there in the morning to hear divine service in the Tahitian language and afterward in our own. Mr. Pritchard performed the service. The third missionary whom we have seen is Mr. Knott, who has resided 40 years on the island. His occupations are chiefly literary, and has now finished his great task of translating the whole Bible. On the whole, it is my opinion that the state of morality and religion in these islands is highly creditable. There are many who attack acrimoniously both the missionaries, their system, and the effect produced. Such reasoners never compare the present to the former state only 20 years before, nor even to that of Europe in this day, but expect the missionaries to effect what the very apostles failed to do. They forget that human sacrifices and the power of an idolatrous priesthood, a system of profligacy unparalleled in the world and consequent infanticide as part of that system, bloody wars where the conquerors spared neither women nor children, have been abolished. That dishonesty, intemperance and licentiousness have been greatly reduced by the introduction of Christianity. 24th of November. 2 years ago, a vessel under English colours was plundered by the inhabitants of the Low Islands, which were then under the dominion of the Queen of Tahiti. It is believed they were instigated to this act by some indiscreet laws issued by Her Majesty. The British government demanded compensation, and a sum nearly equal to $3,000 was agreed to be paid on the 1st of September. The Commodore at Lima ordered Captain Fitzroy to inquire concerning this debt. Captain Fitzroy asked for an interview with the Queen. For this purpose, a parliament was held where all the principal chiefs of the island were assembled. I cannot sufficiently express our general surprise at the extreme good sense displayed on all sides. I believe everyone in our party left the meeting with a very different opinion of the Tahitians from what he entertained when entering. The chiefs and people resolved to complete the sum which was wanting. Captain Fitzroy urged that it was hard that their private property should be sacrificed for the crimes of distant islanders. They replied that they were grateful for his consideration, but that they were determined to help their queen in her difficulty. When the parliament was over, Captain Fitzroy invited the queen to pay the Beagle a visit. 25th of November. 4 boats were sent on shore for Her Majesty. The ship was dressed with flags for her coming on board. With her came most of the chiefs. The behaviour of all was very proper. They begged for nothing and appeared much gratified by the presents which were given them. The Queen is an awkward, large woman, without any beauty, gracefulness, or dignity of manners. She appears to have only one royal attribute, viz. A perfect immovability of expression, and that generally rather a sulky one, under all circumstances. Skyrockets and the seamen's songs appear to give most amusement. The Queen remarked that one song, a very noisy comic one, certainly could not be Hymeny. The royal party did not leave us till past midnight. They all appeared well contented with their visit.